Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Demony Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, big things that are usually small. You know that recurring dream you have when you're trying to sit on a normal-sized toilet, but uh-oh, it's huge! Or you're looking at a beautiful butterfly and suddenly it's the size of a kite? No? That just me? Anyways, we're gonna check out some animals that you would typically think of as being small, but sometimes get super large and very hunky-chunky. From moths to snails to frogs and polywogs, these animals will give you a huge surprise. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, could you carry a sea slug around in a baby Bjorn? Joining me today to talk about giant animals is regular-sized human comedian and science whiz, Pallavi Ganalan.
Hi! I just felt so good when you called me regular-sized. Like, I'm supposed to be the way I am.
You're just a human-sized.
Correct.
Know?
And I'm shaped the way I'm supposed to be.
Right.
I love that.
I mean, like, there's a great diversity of human shapes and stuff, but, like, hey, we won. We're in some of those shapes.
Exactly.
We're not like a tiny rectangle. I wake up every day kind of happy that I didn't turn into a little rectangle.
That's your Kafka nightmare, is becoming a shape.
Becoming a shape, yeah. Like, you know, if you turn into a giant cockroach, I think it's workable. You still have limbs, you still have eyes and sensory organs. If I turn into like a wake up and find I've just turned conceptually into a trapezoid, that would suck.
I feel like it would be kind of fun, though. Imagine all the places you could fit, you know, like structurally, I guess.
Kind of a flatlander situation, though, because if I'm two-dimensional, everything is lines to me, which actually might make things simpler.
Every time I see that in, like, animated shows where things go 2D all of a sudden just because they wanted to feature a new animator, it's kind of fun. It's definitely scary. And how they usually portray someone on drugs or something. But it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I guess it would be fun. You know, like if I was given the chance to experience the two-dimensional lifestyle, I think I'd probably take the wizard turning people into two-dimensional things up on it.
Yeah, just like a little vacay into the 2D world, you know?
right. But 4D, I don't know. That would get freaky.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm down for anything. Hey, I'll do any dimension once.
Pallavi is open-minded to four-dimensional fun. Just a three-dimensional girl looking for some four-dimensional fun.
That sounds like a bad category on an internet
bad
site.
Bad Craigslist ad. Missed connections, the four-dimensional trapezoid concept.
I'm going to name that for my memoir.
Well, today we are talking about dimensions. We're talking about animals who we typically think of as being small or medium-sized, but actually grow to be ridiculously big. And, like, I think there's something interesting because it's not like these are the biggest animals in the world, but when you think of a big animal, like a blue whale, it's like, oh yeah, like it's a skyscraper-sized whale. Like, I get it, though. It's a blue whale. But when it's an animal that's like usually little and then it's suddenly really big, there's something almost more intimidating about that. It's like they are punching way above their belt. Like, it's unsettling. Yeah.
It is very unsettling because we're so used to seeing, especially with like creepy crawly things, at least the one thing about them is that they're small. So we can like feel like we have control over all of their little limbs and whatnot. But when they're big and gross looking, that's some stuff out of like a sci-fi novel, you know, like it's it feels uncontrollable. But it's cool. It's kind of cool because usually they're small and we just swat at them. And then now they're like, nah, we're getting big.
Payback time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the first animal we are talking about is the Hercules moth, which is very aptly named. It is the biggest moth in the world. So it is found in Australia, of course. And it's got a wingspan of over 10 inches or 27 centimeters. So almost a foot-long wingspan, which, you know, when I think of a moth, I kind of think of the guys that like to flock around the lights outside or the ones that get in my closet and I've got to chase away from my clothes. I don't think about something that could cover my entire face and then some.
Oh, wow. When you put it on your face like that, that's scary sounding. Now I'm imagining you trying to breathe through a moth. I could see that in a horror movie. I think you'd be very good at screaming with moth on your face in a horror movie.
Thank you.
Side note, don't buy mothballs. They are just poison, and then you cannot find a way to get rid of them. I was recommended to buy mothballs one time in my master's program, and then I just possessed poison, which is bad. I did not know this.
What you should do is actually cedar, because cedar is not that toxic to people, but it is unpleasant for moths. So if you use they have cedar strips or cedar blocks, but not the actual poison mothballs. Like, that's a lot better. And it smells nice.
Why smells like do the they wood. Sell mothballs if they're cedar? Like, why is that a product that exists? They went too hard with mothballs. And they were like, let's kill off some human-sized humans at the same time.
Right,
all right.
Right.
I don't
know. I guess I wasn't thinking about the danger to humans with mothballs, but like I have a dog and I'm like, for sure she would eat a mothball immediately. That'd be her stomach. Like hardly before I get it out of the package, like she would immediately somehow get that in her and we'd have to go to the vet. Like she knows, she is so drawn to anything that can hurt her and she puts it in her mouth immediately. Scissors drop on the floor for a second.
I feel that way. I feel what you just said about your dog putting stuff in her mouth that can hurt her. I feel that way about men. You know, that's me with men. I get it, little dog.
The mothballs is men.
Yeah. Okay. I want to say anytime I see a big moth, though, that's, I think, the ultimate revenge story because we're so... Right. Racist against moths and so nice to butterflies. Like we,
right.
This is discrimination. It's rude. And I'm glad they're big and covering our faces. I mean, they don't, right. But they should be because we're just so mean to them. I always root for the underdog. Like my favorite bird is a pigeon. I don't like when people just randomly assign like a liking to certain insects, you know?
Yeah.
Moths are chill. Like, they're just hanging out. Why are we so mean to them?
Yeah, it's a popularity contest when it comes to animals often. And so insects often get the short end of the stick. And it is unfair that, like, certain insects are like, oh, ladybugs and butterflies. Well, they're the good ones. Even though, like, there are definitely butterflies that if you put in your mouth will kill you. Well, not kill you, but
hear that, Katie's dog? Do you hear
She's
that?
Like, huh?
She's like,
I'll go find a butterfly. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, yeah, moths and butterflies are very, very similar. And they can actually, honestly, there are moths to me that are some of the most beautiful examples of lepidoptery in the world. They're these vibrant colors and they're beautiful and they're like really fuzzy, fluffy, cute ones too. So I don't get the moth hate. Like, sure, I mean, like pantry moths are annoying. I don't like those and clothing moths are annoying. But when it's just a general thing of like, I don't like any moth because, you know, I'm weird and hate cool things like moths. I just invented a person to be angry at.
But, no, that you know. Person exists. The many people hate moths.
Right.
Moths teach us a lot of lessons, like go into the light. That's one that we need to be ready to enact at any moment the end of our lives.
Always be expressing pheromones. Like, that's another one. That's another lesson.
A-B-E-P. Always be expressing pheromones. That's what they teach you in business school.
Right. Exactly. But yeah, so these moths are, in addition to being huge, they're, I think, quite pretty. They, as adults, they have this brown coloration with these interesting white markings. Kind of looks like, I don't know, an interesting piece of pottery or something to me.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful coloration.
It does look also, kind of ceramic.
Yeah, yeah. Like a terracotta sort of design. And males have these long tails at the bottom of each wing that I think are quite pretty, also making them look even larger, just ridiculously huge. Like, you put this thing, I feel like I could wear this as a top, like it would cover my entire top side, which is both kind of cool, but also a little intimidating.
Yeah, it's I feel like there would be a pretty Moss would be a pretty top.
I wouldn't want to kill, like, I wouldn't want to wear dead moths around. Or wait,
this is
maybe
how Cruella De Vil started, and I don't want to go down.
Maybe I would though, because like
we just said celebrate the moth, and now you're like murder it.
for
my clothes.
Well, all right, let me explain some more about this moth, and then we'll get to the where I could potentially wear this moth as clothing and not have it be evil. Well, first of all, let's talk about their life cycle. So as caterpillars, they're really chunky as well. They grow up to be about 5 inches or 12 centimeters long, and they're this bright, beautiful blue with fleshy green spikes. It kind of looks to me like that leaked ghost prop for the new Ghostbusters movie. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh,
the,
yeah.
Like, blue ghost that's just a bunch of, like, wrinkles and folds.
Yeah.
It looks like that. It's like this little, it's like, Heimlich from A Bug's Life, except blue.
That's
and
what
with
it
spikes.
Is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's very wrinkly. It's like a Michelin man in bug form.
Yes, yes. Ooh, love that. Love that sleep paralysis demon, Michelin man in bug form.
Yeah.
With a bunch of legs and spikes. But yeah, they are quite pretty, in my opinion. They actually spend most of their life as a caterpillar or as a cocoon. And a rather brief existence as an adult. So this is their main form. Like, this is most of their life is as this little chunky blue Michelin spiky man.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. So the caterpillar stage lasts for a couple of months, and they spend that time bulking up immensely at an incredible rate. And then they wrap themselves in a cocoon, and this period of development can take from several months to over a year, just hanging out in the cocoon, developing into this giant behemoth of a moth. So finally, when they emerge as adults, they have only about 2 weeks to mate and reproduce because they don't eat. They don't even have fully developed mouth parts, so they can't use their mouths. Then they use all of the stored energy from their caterpillar stage to go out, find someone to hook up with, lay eggs, and then die. And then that's it.
Okay, that sounds like a weekend for me. Like, spend most of it just, like, cocooned up and just preparing mentally to get out there. And then try to go, like, don't eat when I'm out there because I'm trying to save money or whatever. And then, you know, try to hook up with somebody and then die at the end of the night. The last part is still a risk.
Yeah.
Wow, what a life. What a life just trapped in a cocoon with your thoughts. I guess that's why they bulk up, that they're just eating a lot in there to distract themselves.
Well, they're actually a goo inside of the cocoon. So, like, the first stage when they're a caterpillar, they're just constantly eating. That's their only job as the larva, is to eat and eat and eat and hopefully not get eaten themselves.
A Bug's Life did a great job of portraying that, now that I think about it. Yeah.
Very accurate. The part where, like, he just turns into a giant caterpillar with tiny wings doesn't generally happen. There are some funny evolutionary instances of, like, especially with phasmids, which are stick bugs. Sometimes they have these little tiny vestigial wings that through evolution they've lost the need to fly, but they still have these wings both for sexual selection and for defensive posturing. But it does look very much like Heimlich, sort of like this giant stick bug, and then these tiny wings they'll furiously flap at
That's
predators.
Super cute. That's adorable.
But as far as I know, there are no butterflies that have that tiny wing phenomenon.
Mm.
It's a really great life, like 40% eating, 50% napping, and 10% boning. Doesn't sound so bad, does it?
Yeah, I feel like that's like the average cat, right? I don't know.
Well, depends on whether they're fixed or not. But I mean, and in terms of, like, when they're in the cocoon, during metamorphosis for butterflies and moths, like, they literally sort of dematerialize. They turn into a sort of goo, protein goo that reforms into a butterfly. The cells, like, turn into sort of these, like, stem cell type things that, like, will regenerate into a full-on butterfly or moth. And the brain seems to survive somewhat. So like there's like a cluster of cells that was their brain because they retain memories from.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like their whatever, not their consciousness, but whatever their
soul,
their soul is like. So that's an afterlife for them, basically.
Because like they do dissolve and it's. And there has been research showing that when you expose a caterpillar to a smell and then a nasty shock or something, they will retain the aversion to the smell as adults. So they clearly retain memories. So
why do they always have to be bad memories that we're testing?
Those are the most effective.
Here's ice cream that you might have liked before.
It's the most effective kind of memory because we remember bad things much better than we remember good things. So that's a good tip for humans. Like when you're thinking back on the day, try to remember all the good things. Consciously remember the good things.
The afterlife is hell. It's like what all the bad stuff that we remember. That's what I'm learning.
We turn into a goo and then we transform into beautiful winged creatures.
That only remembers our worst nightmares.
Yeah, exactly. If we were a moth. So that is the Hercules moth lifestyle. So I feel like they basically have 2 weeks to mate and then they die. And then it's like, look, that's a pretty short life. I wouldn't mind.
So
like,
you're saying let's make it shorter.
No, I'm saying once they die, I will wear them as a shirt. Like it's not me murdering them. It's okay. Me waiting, like stalking
in the
them.
Wings for their wings. I get it.
Right. Just stalking, like, seeing when they mate, and then seeing when they keel over and die, and then wearing them as clothes.
That sounds like a wonderful scene in Psycho. But that's like, I mean, why am I forgetting? Like bug scientists. What are they called again?
Lepidopterists.
Like when they put
the study of butterflies and moths.
Yeah, when they put the little pins in them and wear, like, you could just put those pins right into clothes, right? Like, where they hang them
up.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Just sew them right up.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting about these beautiful markings that I would love to wear as the Cruella de Vil of moths is that they seem to look a little bit like cryptic markings, but they're a little vague. So to really see what these markings can accomplish, you have to take a look at another large moth in the same moth family, the Atlas moth, who has much more distinct markings that are similar to the Hercules moth, where you can really see like what these markings are supposed to be. So in the Hercules moth, it kind of looks like these sort of like white spots and then this vague, interesting pattern on the tips of their wings. But the Atlas moth has a lot more detail generally. It's a little smaller. It's the second biggest moth in terms of wing surface area, though. So they're still big and fluttery. So they live in dry rainforests in Southeast Asia, South Asia, and East Asia. They are very similar looking in terms of their markings to the Hercules moth, but it's just much like higher definition. So that allows us to kind of see what these markings are really meant to portray. It's wingspan is a little over 9 inches or 24 centimeters. Meanwhile, its body is comically tiny. It's like this little tiny fat body, which is really, really small compared to its huge wings. And I find it hilarious. It's kind of like a reverse Heimlich character from Bug's Life, where he's got the tiny wings and the big body.
Yeah.
It's got the huge wings and a tiny body.
The wings are really interesting because the tips of the wings look like snakes to me.
Yes.
Like snakes with eyes.
That's exactly what they're supposed to look like. And that's exactly right.
Good job, little guy.
Yeah. No, this is what I mean. Like with the Hercules moth, they actually have a somewhat similar pattern on the tips of their wings, but it's a little bit less clear. With the Atlas moth, it is stunningly clear that these are supposed to be snakes. Like the level of detail is you can see an eye, you can see a like a snout, and you can see a mouth of the snake, and they are shaped like a snake head. So the tips of their wings kind of jut out in this little oval area, and it looks like a pair of snake heads are growing out of the moth's wingtips. That's the level of detail and shape that you have to these snake heads. And indeed, these are used to ward off predators, mainly birds. Because once they, when they start to flutter and shake their wings a little bit, it looks like these two snake heads suddenly sprouted from this moth and are moving towards the bird. And the bird like panics and runs away. This is like becoming more and more like A Bug's Life, isn't it?
I know. They did good. They did a good job. Good job, A Bug's Life. This podcast episode brought to you by,
Pixar.
Bug's Life.
Check out Pixar's new movie, Luca.
I didn't even know what their new movie was. You're on top of this.
Yeah. Well, I am paid by them. No, I'm not. I'm not. In A Bug's Life, they make a fake bird to scare off the grasshoppers. And
oh, yeah.
In this case, it's a fake snake to scare off birds. It's interesting. They're somewhat distant-ish cousins to the Hercules moth. Their life cycle is somewhat similar. Their adult forms, like the Hercules moth, also don't really have mouth parts, and they don't eat like the Hercules moth and live only a few days. Because they're smaller, they probably can't live as long because they don't store as much energy. So basically, the bigger you are, the slower your metabolism, the more stored energy you have, the less frequently you'll need to eat. Even though if you are a big animal and you want to live past a couple of weeks, you will need to eat and you'll need to eat great quantities, but your metabolism is shorter. So it's, or your metabolism is slower than a tiny animal that needs to like eat constantly small amounts to maintain its energy levels. So with this moth, it makes sense that it would live a bit less longer than the Hercules moth because it doesn't eat. And then it just dies. It's like, you know, I did all my eating when I was a chunky little caterpillar.
This is like my mom's worst nightmare. It's just like, you're not eating. And then you die. This is what happens to you.
This is what happens when you have sex and you don't eat.
Yeah, exactly. My mom's like, this is a moth on drugs.
But yeah, it is so interesting because in addition to its wingtips looking exactly like snakes, they definitely put on a really good performance. So when they're threatened, they'll drop to the ground and start to flutter its wings. So it looks like the snake heads are writhing around, and it really puts on a Daniel Day-Lewis Oscar-winning performance. Really annoying on set, demanding everyone calls it a snake and... You know, like...
But worth it, huh?
Worth it.
Final product, worth it.
Exactly.
That explains a lot, because in so many, like, movies and things, you see not necessarily moths, but, like, butterflies or something landing, and they flutter their wings a lot, and that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Insects used to get even bigger back in prehistoric times. Dragonflies, known as griffin flies in the late Permian period, 275 million years ago, had a wingspan of over 2.5 feet, 75 centimeters, and weighed over a pound, or 450 grams, and were basically the size of crows. Why could insects get so huge back then? One theory is the higher oxygen content on Earth at the time allowed for greater invertebrate growth, due to the way they breathe with numerous porous respiratory openings over their body. A larger surface area would require a higher concentration of oxygen in order to effectively diffuse the oxygen throughout their large bodies. Another compatible theory is that as soon as birds evolved, they basically ruined large insects' chance of survival. Even if there was enough oxygen to sustain the insects' bodies, bigger insects would be less quick and nimble than smaller insects and would be easy prey for the dinosaurs that had just discovered the power of flight. When we return, things are about to get really slimy with some giant gastropods! One of the largest animals in the world is actually a distant relative of the common garden snails. The colossal squid, which reaches a length of over 30 feet or 10 meters and can weigh over 1,000 pounds or 500 kilograms, is a member of the mollusk phylum. Mollusks includes everything from clams to octopuses and squids to terrestrial snails and slugs. Cephalopods, the class that includes squids, octopuses, cuttlefish, and nautiluses, may be the most cognitively advanced of the mollusks, but when it comes to size, there are other mollusks who can get surprisingly large. So, do you like snails, Pulavi?
I empathize with snails a lot. Like, I don't like when people squish them. Mm-hmm. I want to, like, protect them because they're so slow, you know?
Right.
I like when people leave them alone. I don't like when people move them, you know?
I do sometimes move them, like, if they're in a walkway.
Yeah,
like in the rain,
to protect,
like,
them. Yeah,
to protect them,
but sometimes when I was younger, I accidentally moved them, and that, like, wasn't good for them. Like, they were like, they were clearly distressed. But
like if they're sometimes they adhere to a surface, and like they're sort of stuck there, and you try to unglue them, and it's just like bad for their little bodies.
Yeah, that's how I think that's happened. I remember that in my memory, but I was trying to help little guy. I'm so sorry.
But if they're like crawling along the ground, especially like in the rain, which is when they typically cross like paths and stuff, like it's okay if you want to like just pick it up real quick and put it into the grass or the side, as long as it's a common garden snail. Don't do that with just any like snail like animal you find that is unidentified, because like some of them cannot be too friendly. Like if you're on a beach and you see like something that looks like a big snail or a big like cone like shell, don't pick it up, because they can actually have toxic barbs they can shoot at you. So yeah, don't pick up a giant.
Toxic barb sounds like someone who works at Michael's.
Oh, Barb, always making my Mondays that much worse. But yeah. But in terms of terrestrial snails, there are some that can get alarmingly big. So the giant African land snail looks like basically a typical garden snail with maybe a pointier shell, but it's huge. So they're found around coastal West Africa, and their shells grow to be over 7 inches or 18 centimeters long and 3.5 inches or 9 centimeters in diameter. And so the meaty part of the snail is a lot more squishy and stretchy, but basically it can cover your entire hand. Like if you hold one of these, like it's the foot, which is like the flat part of the snail, can stretch out and just drape over your whole hand, which...
I know. I'm looking at these pictures. I'm like, this is a cat. I don't know what you think this is, but it's a cat to me. It's so cute. It's just like perched there. I want to get it a little collar. That's probably a bad instinct of mine. Why do we have to domesticate everything? Leave the snail alone, Pulavi. But it's like, with its little paw
I know.
draped over her
thumb.
Well,
it doesn't technically have feet, but because its foot is so big, it has these folds. And so in this picture, which I'll have in the show notes, it's just posed. It's so photogenic, too, because it's got its little, a fold of its foot just draped over her hand, and it's like mugging for the camera, and it's got its little tentacles all pointed up. It looks like it's very rabbit like.
I was just gonna say that the mouth, the nose area looks like a rabbit because of how it's shaped, those little semicircles.
It's a sweet baby that I want to hold. I mean, when I discovered these things, I was like, I want one as a pet. It is a bad idea, obviously. Like anytime it's like, oh, there's this amazing animal that I'd love to hug and squeeze and have as a pet.
Leave it alone. Leave it alone, people. Let it survive.
Well, actually, in this case, it's not because to preserve the giant African land snail, but because they are so good at being alive and eating that they can easily become super invasive species and destroy vegetation in native plants in the area that they are introduced. So you don't actually have to worry too much about them. They are just so voracious. They will eat and eat and eat. And so they have actually become a problem.
Even that's cute. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see one of these little guys munching.
Mm-hmm. I know, munching and crunching, destroying entire crops and native species of plants.
Ruining the ecosystem.
Yeah.
That's why we think they're cute. They're just like us. Destructive behavior.
Like people. It thinks it's people.
It thinks it's people.
But yeah, I mean, this makes them highly illicit in many countries. and like illegal to own as a pet. I mean, in Florida, I think they're already becoming an invasive species. So I know, like, again, like I can predict people's response to this. Like, I know my listeners, you look at this, you're like, I want it as a pet. I want it now. I want one too. Like, I, you know, I looked into this. It's like, wait, could I have this as a pet? No. The answer is no. But don't feel bad for wanting to hug an animal. Like, I think it's like it's a natural response to something cool or cute. I mean, if you don't find snails cute, I don't know how to relate to you. But, you know, like if you when you see something, you're like, that's cute. I want to hug it and keep it as a pet. Like, I think that's a totally normal human response. It's just and I'm not like guilt tripping everyone for feeling that. It's just like. You know, it's good to make note of. It's like, yeah, it's just it's too bad, but we can't do that because, you know, they will eat all of our crops and leave us to starve.
Man, this is like when after Beverly Hills Chihuahua, everybody bought a Chihuahua.
Yeah.
Don't do that with this episode,
don't
please.
Do that. Beverly Hills giant snail.
Giant moths just everywhere. Somewhere some farmer is like, Katie Golden, just shaking his fist in the sky.
Just a huge army of snails with like cute little collars on them escaped, little bows on their tentacles. Yeah, but they can also be carriers of rat lungworm, which is a parasitic nematode who uses the giant snails as a host. So you don't want to put one of these things in your mouth raw because that can cause meningitis. I mean,
again,
I feel like
back to the men that I've dated.
I feel like this is one of those like warning labels they put on knives or something where it's like, don't put in your body. Like, don't put this snail in your mouth. Although there was a case, I think this was not with a giant snail, but with a banana slug. Someone like on a dare, like ate a banana slug and got rat lungworm and got meningitis.
God.
Yeah. So don't do that. Don't put animals in your mouth, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially raw animals that you just find that are alive. Don't put them
especially
in your mouth.
Especially giant ones. Like, that's...
Right.
I feel like that's embarrassing. like for the snail, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
That snail looked dignified,
like, really?
And now you're just putting your mouth on it.
Right. Like, really, dude? Like, millions of years of evolution to get to this size so birds don't eat me and you're
and
just,
then
like,
you're just
putting
like
me in your mouth on a bet.
Like,
come on, man. Don't be
rude.
Like Homer Simpson in a donut with these snails.
That's exactly what I was picturing.
There have been specimens that have been found who are almost a foot long, so they can be just quite hefty. You'd feel it's like to be able to feel the heft of a giant snail is something to think about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you hold it in your arms, you feel the heft of this snail, and it looks up at you longingly and then eats all your crops and we all die.
The dream.
The dream. But this is not the only big, chunky mollusk we're going to talk about. So to get to one of the biggest slugs in the world, we actually have to look at marine slugs or sea hares. So sea hares are found within the same clade as terrestrial snails and slugs, heterobranchia, and they bear a very close resemblance to their land slug counterparts. So sea slug is often used to refer to other types of sea animals informally, like sea cucumbers. But sea cucumbers aren't actually gastropods or related to terrestrial slugs. So for clarity, I'm specifying sea hares. But nudibranchs and other groups of marine gastropods are also members of heterobranchia. So the colorful little nudibranchs that you see, there are other types of like sea slugs that really are truly sea slugs. But some things that we call sea slugs are something like a sea cucumber. And it's just like it's sort of a misnomer.
This is like. Oh, is this a squares rectangle situation where squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are square or not rectangles aren't squares?
I mean, this is confusing to me because I just like woke up this morning and turned into a trapezoid. And so like I'm not like square. Like, what do you mean right angles? I don't get it.
OK, gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, like, no, I think it's more just of a misnomer. Like, sea cucumbers are not really slugs in any sense of the word. Like, they are not related to slugs. They're not in heterobranchia. They're not even gastropods. So
harsh words coming from you.
You're not even a gastropod. So, like,
you don't even go here.
You're not even a gastropod. So, like, don't even think about sitting here. This is like the table for gastropods. Remember that in high school when all the gastropods are super clicky? So annoying.
Yeah. Definitely barb. Felt like a sea cucumber.
Real toxic barb. So sea hares typically grow quite a bit larger than their terrestrial counterparts of land snails and slugs. So the giant sea hare is just incredibly mind-bogglingly big. So the black sea hare is the largest sea hare there is and the largest sort of slug-type animal in the world. They are found in the Pacific Ocean and coastal California. They can grow to be almost 40 inches long, 100 centimeters, and weigh over 30 pounds.
What?
Or 14 kilograms.
No way.
Yes. So what? Bigger this than a newborn like, baby.
This is over three times the size of my dog.
Yes.
That's
it would
wild.
Like, it could just eat your dog. It won't eat your dog, but it could.
I think they'd get along.
Yeah, probably. It looks, so when you take it out of the water, it kind of like puddles down because, you know, there's like the gravity of
like. It's like, Alex Mack.
Right.
It's a throwback reference. Just kind of spilling over, you know?
Right, exactly. And it's this sort of like inky black with like quote unquote bunny ears. So these are actually rhinophores, which are sea hare sensory organs. And so I think they're cute. And probably very slimy. They only live about a year, which is incredible given their size, because that means they consume just ridiculous amounts of algae and grow ridiculously fast to reach that size. And because they grow to be so big, and because they actually produce a skin toxin, as adults, they really don't have that many natural predators. So they're these adorable, toxic, slimy 30-pound balls of fun that I want to carry around in Baby Bjorn and call a little slimy.
I want to be them. Like, what, you get to live fast, die young, eat whatever you want, not get touched by anybody? Give it to me. Mm-hmm. If I could redo life, it would be as a sea hare. But not one that we're messing with. I want to just be left alone.
Right.
To be my slightly denser puddle in a large puddle of the ocean.
I feel like these are some really inspirational animals this episode. Like, eat, nap, and mate, and then die, or just eat constantly.
I think this is saying a lot more about us and our depression during quarantine than anything else. Every animal, we're like, yeah, just to not be sentient would be nice.
Yeah, I'd like to be a black puddle in a bigger black depths of the ocean.
We started out trying to be shapes, so where else could we go from there?
Right. I mean, I'm proud. Look, I think it's an accomplishment, right, to be human-shaped right now instead of just, like, congeal into, like, a puddle on the ground.
I guess. I don't know. Listen, I'm just existing right now. But the sea hare stuff, that sounds like next level. It does look a little bit like a squished flubber, I'm noticing.
I remember now. Flubbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like one of those.
It looks like it definitely
dudes.
Looks like a depressed flubber, like goth flubber is what I think it is.
Put me back in the water.
Oh, God. I bet it sounds like Niles Crane and we're just being terrible. We're being terrible.
I'm not good at social situations, please.
I like that. I like that one better.
Look at my dapper little mustache, which is really just part of my folded foot out in front, and I look very fancy, and please put me back. Mm. I do not belong here. Yeah, I like fancy sea hare.
Yeah,
they do. If you look for a lot of different like species of sea hares, they are quite fancy and a lot of frippery and stuff. They can be really colorful, have a lot of cool folds and stuff. Yeah, I like the idea of them being the fancy boys and gals of the ocean.
Yeah, little bow ties. God damn, yeah. we're just anthropomorphizing all of the, or monsterfication, what is it? I don't know. I don't know what it would be in this case. Yeah.
In the move from sea to land, snails had some extra slimy adaptations. Their bodies were originally meant for aquatic environments, so moisture loss was not a factor, and they would typically breathe using gills. Most land snails, however, have evolved a lung and can take in air through a respiratory pore called a pneumostome. They need a thick layer of mucus to prevent moisture loss, critical for the health of its tissues and for gas exchange to occur in its lung. They also make good use of the operculum, a little trap door on their shells that their marine counterparts evolved for self-defense, but terrestrial snails can also use to prevent moisture loss. Still, snails prefer moist, damp environments, so they don't end up as accidental escargot. When we return, we're going to go from one slimy critter to another with some ridiculously massive frogs. Frogs. They're hippity and hoppity or crawly or swimmy, and they come in green, brown, blue, yellow, and sizes big and small. The smallest frog in the world is an adorable microhylid species. Microhylid frogs, as you may remember from previous episodes, are teeny tiny frogs. Some species even develop symbiotic relationships with tarantulas. The tarantulas protect the frogs like little pets, in exchange for the frogs protecting the tarantula eggs from ant invasions. The smallest known frog, Paedophrine amauensis from Papua New Guinea, can fit on the face of a quarter. From snout to vent, aka nose to butt, it only grows to be about 3/10 of an inch, or 7.7 millimeters. Adorable. Now, let's talk about a frog who can grow to be about the size of a small chihuahua. So we've talked about small frogs. Let's talk about big frogs.
This concerns me now, because they're big. So the things we've talked about thus far, I guess the moths are a little bit scary, but they're flying. I can get away from them. I feel like they're slower, right? Frogs jump like very fast, right? The snails, the slugs, they weren't going anywhere. The hares, right? This frog, I feel like the reason that frogs, this could alarm me, is because they're very slow and then very fast. I want to take a frog to the face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like it could suddenly jump and just smack you right in the face.
I think the other thing that's interesting is that, like, you know how we have certain stereotypes for animals? I feel like with frogs, I feel like they're kind of like mystic and intelligent, or we like assign that to them. Or like frogs or toads, I guess, like in general, in like cartoons and stuff. But I guess also like there's the Budweiser ones. But I don't know. I feel like they might just have too much information to hold for me. It's overwhelming. Right. You know,
you don't think a slug is going to plan anything, but you're worried about a frog with a plan.
No, it's more like I'm afraid I'm going to talk to a frog that will see my future. You know what I mean?
I see.
And like the bigger the frog is, the more intimidating it is to me.
Sort of a hypnotoad situation where you look into its eyes and like you see the fourth dimension, and then your brain melts.
And then I am the fourth dimension.
Oh,
and
no.
Look at where we are now.
And you can't even find In-N-Out in the fourth dimension. That's only in California. God damn. So the Goliath frog, which is very aptly named because it's a pretty big frog. It's the largest living frog in the world. It is an endangered species with a relatively small range in Equatorial Guinea and Cameroon. So they live in sandy-bottomed rivers, and they grow up to be 13 inches or 32 centimeters long from nose to butt and weigh over 7 pounds or over 3 kilograms. So, you know, it's like, I feel like even though these are technically smaller than the black sea hare, it's still more intimidating.
Because they got legs, man.
Yeah, they have legs. It's the legs. It's the big, muscular, meaty legs. They did not skip leg day or arm day, and they just, like, look swole.
It's the sea hares look like, you know, that image of like the animal creature forming legs and coming out of the primordial goop type thing.
Right.
That's like the sea hares, like the first half. Frog's like the second half where it has legs. It's one of us. It's like a person, but it's a frog. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think evolution did that specifically.
It did not
thing.
Work
Go
that
from
way.
Sea hare to frog.
But it did in the cartoon that everyone references. That's sure. So it looks like that. It's like now it's not just this like amorphous squishy thing. It's got us qualities. You know,
it's taking a definitive form. It's like Odo going from goo to Odo in Star Trek. Which one was that?
I did not watch any of that.
Well,
you're on your own.
Oh, damn it. You know, Deep Space. No, not Deep Space. Star Trek.
Battlestar Star Trek.
Star Trek, the one where we're not on. We're on a like the space station.
Star Trek
one,
Generation Zoomer. What?
So these frogs are a brownish olive color with a yellowish stomach. They can live up to about 15 years old in the wild, or over 20 years in captivity. So you could keep one of these. Don't do this, but, you know, like they would be if you are like a witch living in their natural habitat and you have like a little hut in the woods and you like you have one of these as like a familiar, it's going to have the same lifespan as like a cat or a dog.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm looking at all these pictures of people holding them and they look so uncomfortable. Like they're stretching them out. They're just like displaying them. And I'm like, this guy, first of all, it's freaky deaky because the legs are so long. Like the jawline is like very like thick and broad. And then the body is there. And then the back legs are like people legs. It's like they could like they feel like they could walk upright when they're like splayed out like that. It's like creepy, man. It does not feel like the way they're holding them. I'm like, this can't be good for you. Like, you're going to get cursed. You're going to get cursed, little kids.
you're going to get hexed by or just punched. Like, they don't even need to curse them. They could just like punch them with their big, strong legs and forelegs.
Yeah.
They kind of have a Dave Bautista vibe to me, like the general shape. You know, he was like he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's so funny. Okay, I can see it because he's got like long legs and like a thick torso.
Right.
It's like a fit dude, right?
Yeah, exactly. no insult to Dave Bautista because
this
like, I think
episode
these frogs
brought
are cool.
to you by Dave Bautista.
So they are predators, which is cool. Cool. They, as adults, will prey upon a large variety of small critters, from insects to smaller frogs, crustaceans, baby turtles, and snakes, and rodents. In one instance, a bat was found in a Goliath frog's stomach, which just must have been, like, can you imagine that one, like, I guess until it got caught and, like, someone was poking around in its stomach, that was, like, a bragging rights day, and no other frog probably believed it. It's like, I caught a flying mouse, and they're like, okay, sure, John, like, whatever.
This is like the Batman villain origin story. Like, it's like, I fought the bat, and I won.
The Joker is just a Goliath frog.
I mean, it's got the same, similar, it's interesting color palette, you know?
we live in a society, says this frog. So why do they get so big? It's actually because they're great parents. They like to do home projects. So males construct nests for their offspring and females guard the nests. So these nests are basically private ponds that they construct for their offspring. Either by digging a ditch near a pool and then blocking it off from the rest of the pool with large rocks, or by creating a dam in a larger pool with rocks, creating a private area. So it's, you know, it's like a National Lampoon Christmas Vacation where like the whole plot is about he wants a pool for his family. Except in this scenario, he's super buff and the wife is also super buff and the wife like hunts down the guy who's going to deny them their pool and punches them in the face.
That's the version that I decided to see.
It's a better version, right?
Yeah. I just think it's interesting that, like, all they're trying to do is protect their family, and we're just, like, yanking them out and taking pictures of them.
We're like, I mean, that's basically the story for any picture of someone holding up an animal.
I know. I don't know why I'm so affected by this one in particular. I'm like, I feel like it's just like them trying to, like, with their little legs, like, dangling and
right.
just trying to, like, grasp at anything.
Yeah,
I just feel so bad.
It's that they're not meant to be held up in this position. It's kind of like when you, like, hold a cat up by the scruff of its
yeah,
neck, but it's like
it
an
is.
Adult. And you really yeah. need to support the rest of its body because it's like too, like it's really only good for kittens, like, to hold it by the scruff of its neck. But, like, when someone holds an adult by the scruff of its neck and they're not, like, supporting its butt, it's like it just looks uncomfortable. Like, you're squishing it. No,
yeah.
don't. It's too hefty. Don't do that. But to be able to construct a pond by excavation and lifting rocks, they literally have to be buff. They need these big froggy muscles. That's why it looks like Dave Bautista. Like, they have these strong arms and strong, they're not really arms, but, like, strong forelimbs and strong hind limbs to be able to dig and lift rocks and make these constructions. And females also need to be pretty buff because they're the guards. They are going to aggressively defend this pool, this private pool for their offspring from any toxic barbs who come around and, like, wants to, like, oh, can I just, like, pop over and use your pool for a minute? It's like, no, my kids are using this pool, and then they fight with their
yeah.
big muscles.
I'm looking forward to motherhood, frankly.
I would love a WWE-style, like, Housewives of Orange County. It's just, like, they're all super buff, and they solve all their problems with choreographed WWE-style wrestling.
Yeah, that sounds super fun, actually. Right. I feel like that's what they were trying to make Glow, the TV
yeah.
show, to me. They're giving it a little bit of a backstory, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is essentially, but I mean, in real life, like real ladies with real problems, but then they work it out in the ring. You know what I mean?
Do you,
like,
Katie, do you think wrestling is real?
What do you mean it's not real?
No, you're right. Let's move on. Look at these guys.
The Undertaker really does care about his family, doesn't he?
I'm sure he does.
He really did need to get revenge on Screwdriver Man. I don't actually want to. guess how big the tadpoles are for these massive frogs?
I don't know what that looks like. I don't, like... Like,
okay, don't look at the images. Just
okay.
Guess.
Wait. So you said so. Describe how big the frog is again.
By the way, just for your information, those images are misleading. So don't go by those.
Okay.
The frog grows to be up to about 13 inches or 32 centimeters long, and they weigh over 7 pounds or 3 kilograms.
I don't know what ratio I'm coming up with, but I'll say, like, then 5 or 6 inches is what I would expect a tadpole to be. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Drum roll. They're just regular tadpole size.
What?
They're like little. Yeah, they only grow to be about, like, you know, an inch long, maybe. Because this
these
is
images
so
are misleading.
I warned you.
I know.
Because after being a tadpole, they grow into a froglet. So a little tiny frog. And that froglet then just grows bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it becomes the biggest frog in the world. So tadpole size doesn't necessarily mean, like, it can indicate it's going to be a bigger frog, but it really just depends on what its development is like. So some frogs, like, develop much bigger tadpoles and invest a lot of their bulk developing during the tadpole stage. Some frogs go from being a tadpole to being a froglet relatively quickly, and most of the bulking up happens with the froglet. Some of them literally shrink, so they go from being a larger tadpole to being a smaller adult frog, because they're,
that's,
like, losing
no,
their tail.
That
yeah.
seems bad. That seems not allowed. I feel
yeah,
like that's
paradox.
Against the,
I think it's called paradoxical frogs.
That sounds like something from The Hitchhiker's Guide. I just don't believe it. Also, this is like the teacup pig problem, where people were kept trying to buy tiny pigs and then they just turned into big pigs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's because they were babies.
Yeah, like, I know, but people thought they were, like, bred to be tiny little baby pigs forever.
No, and then, yeah, the micro pigs can, they're still small adults, but they don't remain cute little piglets forever. So you have to be prepared for, like, a big, fat, hefty, like, adult, I think they're
pig.
I think they're, like, a potbelly pig that's been bred to be smaller. But yeah, like as adults, they get big and hairy and round and cool. Like, I mean, I still think
they're
awesome.
And who doesn't? Who amongst us doesn't as adults?
I mean, I feel like I've gotten bigger and hairier just within the past 4 hours. So, like,
I'm seeing it before my eyes.
People have to chill out about
this. This is like, I mean, with every animal, we're trying to just make it be like cute and small forever. And it's like, just let animals be animals. You know what I mean?
Just let them be. Yeah, let this, like, giant muscular frog go around talking about protein shakes. It's all right. Don't pick them up.
I have gotten, this is a side note, but I've gotten very against, like, breeding of almost any kind. Where I'm like, even now with, like, fish and, like, hamsters, I'm like, why are we doing this thing with animals where we're like, are you not entertained? Like, don't we have enough books to read? Like, why do we have to breed every animal? Like, develop, play the piano. Like, learn something. Don't just get a pet, a bred pet. There's other animals that need to be saved. Get a little weird mutt from the rescue. Don't breed things into existence that don't need to be alive, mom and dad, okay? Just for your own entertainment and comfort. All right? This is the new thing. I have friends with, like, hamsters, and I just smile and nod because I'm just like, I don't see why do you need that? You know what I mean? It's just weird. It started to become weird to me. It's just very weird to me. The whole thing is weird to me. Like, save an animal, stop doing things for your entertainment, and go, like, donate to a local charity. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm sick of this whole thing.
I love this rant. I really agree, especially, I know this is a tangent, but really quickly, like, with breeding animals, it's like, it really should be about the, like, especially with dogs, like, it should be about the health and emotional health of the dogs. Like, I don't need a dog that has an extra pair of eyes on its butt. Like, you know,
it's now fine. That you're saying it. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Speaking of extra pair of eyes on its butt, this frog. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, I definitely feel that way, too.
But somehow, back to tadpoles. I shared with you this picture of this absolutely massive tadpole, and, like, probably you thought, like, oh, this is probably the tadpole for the Goliath frog, and that would be a reasonable assumption, but this is actually the tadpole for a bullfrog, and bullfrogs do actually get to be quite big, so it's, like, not, like, too unusual for there to be a larger tadpole, but this tadpole is unique. This is the unicorn of tadpoles. This is the biggest tadpole ever discovered. This is a tadpole named Dart, who is a unusually large bullfrog tadpole. Unusually large tadpole in general, just, like, should not be this big. It was discovered by research ecologists in Arizona. The tadpole was 10 inches or over 25 centimeters long. This is even larger than most adult bullfrogs. So this tadpole is an extreme outlier. Like other record-breaking large tadpoles, it may actually never mature into adulthood, which signals that it has extremely atypical hormones. And this is called neoteny, in, like, where it's like you retain your juvenile characteristics throughout your whole life. And in some amphibious species, like in species of salamanders, neoteny is common, and it's like a normal part of the species life. So axolotls are actually juvenile salamander that just, like, maintain their juvenile characteristics their whole life, through their whole life cycle.
The men of animals, if you will.
Don't cancel me, men. But so for this tadpole, it's really interesting because this is obviously an outlier. This is a mutation, but it does kind of give you a little bit of a sense of, like, how this neoteny can evolve in other species of amphibians, where you just, like, this tadpole just, like, decided not to become an adult and just become a bigger and bigger tadpole. Don't worry about this big chonky boy. Like, he's being kept safe by ecologists who are curious to see how long he lives and how big he gets. So he is being probably one of the luckiest tadpoles, just like getting to live the cushy life, just being enormous and eating all the time. God, I mean, I am like genuinely jealous of these animals in this episode. Just getting to
all vibes, no thoughts. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Just chilling and eating.
I know. And it's like, it just gets to be a big baby its whole life. And scientists are thrilled.
Incredible.
And they even let it drink beer. No, I'm kidding. But there is a photo of it being held up next to a Coors can to show how massive it is.
Like, I don't like that picture because it looks like they're squeezing it. You know what I mean? Like, all of these pictures, I'm like, leave them alone. I don't know why. I want to see the pictures. Mm-hmm. I like seeing the pictures.
Right.
But I'm also like, put them down.
Yeah, I don't actually think
unhand
that...
them.
I don't actually think it's being squeezed. I think it's just so chunky that, like, yeah, the gravity of it being gently held, it's just like spilling over the researcher's fingers.
It's just all in my head, honestly. But...
But I feel it. Yeah, just like, leave them alone. Leave these giant tadpoles alone. Yeah, but Dart is probably living the high life, being just, you know, got its beer and its
banana
recliner and its banana. That was also I guess for scale. I hope that they gave it the beer and banana afterwards. Like, you did a good job during
just
the photo show. Shop, just chill now.
Yeah.
No, don't feed beer to tadpoles, guys.
We have had too many disclaimers for this to be a responsible episode.
I know. Don't, just overall disclaimer, never listen to anything I say. There we go. Legally indemnified. So before we go, I want to end with a listener email, actually in response to a recent episode where we talked about sawfish, which is a type of ray that actually looks like it's got a saw for a nose, and it's really cool. And it's not a nose, it's actually a rostrum, so like this pointy bit that comes off of the front of a fish. So this is the email. Hi, your discussion on today's episode about sawfish reminded me of a museum piece I saw when I visited Berlin in 2019. It's a sword made from a sawfish rostrum. I forget what year it's from, but it was in the medieval Renaissance section at the Deutsches Historisches Museum in Berlin. Love the show. Thank you, Neil Miller. Thank you so much for your email, Neil. I had no idea that people made sawfish swords, but I guess it makes total sense, like, that humans would do that. We see an animal that looks like it's got a chainsaw for a nose, and then we turn swords into it.
We see a weapon, we make a weapon. That's us, the arms.
That is us.
Standoff.
To a T. I doubt these were ever used as actual weapons. They don't look super practical.
Oh, good. So we just made it for no reason.
But yeah, you know, just for funsies.
Maybe it was after one died. I'm gonna say that.
Hopefully. One would hope. I wouldn't guarantee it, but one would hope. it's probably made out of the cartilage skeleton left behind from a dead sawfish's rostrum. So sharks and rays, like, they actually don't have bones like humans do. They have cartilage. And we actually do have cartilage, like, in our nose and in our ears, but in sharks and rays, the cartilage is very hard and bone-like. So that's like when they leave behind these skeletons. It's actually a very, very hard cartilage. And so that's what this is made out of, a hard cartilage left behind their rostrum, which is this like long protrusion that looks like a chainsaw with teeth on it. Those pointy bits are actually not teeth, they're denticles. But we talked about that in last week's episode, the nose. Nose as in the face nose. And yeah, I did some research on these swords. It looks like this particular sword that Neil sent in was made in the late 16th century and was never used as an actual weapon, but as like a rich person novelty. But more recently, actually in West Australia, a guy was arrested after being seen brandishing a sword. And apparently it was handmade out of a sawfish rostrum with a wooden and leather wrapped hilt. And allegedly, he attacked a police officer with it, but I'm pretty sure Australian police probably just arrested Aquaman, who was trying to save the world from some evil octopus. And they're like, all right, we're bringing you in. It's like, no, but I am saving the world. Listen, my kingdom undersea. I have the evil Dr. Octopus is trying to take over the land, and I have come. And they just arrest him. And, you know, that's how it is.
Dr. Octopus and Aquaman villain? I thought that was a Spider-Man.
Pallavi, I don't know. I don't know these things. Like, I'm sure there's an evil... I'm sure that Aquaman has... Like, at least sort of a rude octopus, right? Like, maybe not an evil octopus, but a rude one.
Just like
one.
A squid that's inked him every once in a while in passing.
Just kind of a snippy squid.
You got so tired, you were like, I'm gonna get nerd emails about this. I don't know.
Actually, when you look into the backstory of Aquaman, it makes no sense that he would fight octopuses because his dad was a half octopus.
Oh man, you're bringing him in now.
What have you done? You've opened a door that can't be closed.
Next week on Fantastical Villains of the Octopus Kingdom.
Next week, an apology episode to all the Marvel fans.
It's just going to be a Notes app apology. Look for it on Twitter.
Is Aquaman Marvel? No, he's DC, right?
Yeah,
he's DC. I'm sorry. Next week, an apology episode to all the DC fans. But I think we've done it. I think we've looked at animals that should be small, but hey, they're big and muscular, and they definitely work out at the gym, and you should be intimidated by them. Thank you so much for joining me, Pallavi. Do you have anything to plug, and where can people find you?
I'm at Pallavi Ganalan, PallaviGunalan, everywhere. And I have something that you might like. It's a webcomic, and it's called Imposter Bear, spelled with two O's, Impostor Bear. And it's on Twitter, and it's on Instagram and Facebook. And it's a webcomic featuring all sorts of bears.
Yeah.
Animal things. And it's sad and funny, just like me. And I do it with my friend at Relatable Doodle. So she and I work on that together. She does the drawing, and then I say the sad words usually.
Very cute, funny, yes. And sad.
Yes.
Definitely check that out. I think you guys would like that. And of course, you can find the show on the internet at Creature Feature Pod on Instagram, at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter. That's FEAT, not FEET. That is something very different. And you can find me. I'm Katie Golden, KATIEGOLDIN, not EN. I spelled my name wrong. We got it wrong. Oops. And if you have a listener email that you want to send in with cool pictures of weird swords made out of dead animals that don't kill any animals, though, to make the weapons. You can send it to me at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. And thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating or review, I read all of the reviews, and they make me so happy, and I really appreciate that. Thanks to the Space Classics for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday.